Hello, I'm Joy Manning, editor of Edible Philly.
And I'm Marisa McClellan, author of Food in Jars.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk about living the food life in Philadelphia and beyond. This week, we're digging into Google's 2016 Food Trends Report. Once a year, Google gathers the data on what we're eating and serves it up.
So I don't even know how I came across this document. I think someone linked to it online, and I clicked through and tumbled down a rabbit hole, and I found it interesting enough that I decided we should really do a podcast dedicated to it, and Joy agreed.
Yeah.
And so we're just going to kind of go through their findings. But so essentially what this is that they pulled the top searches that have to do with food across Google.
When I have been aware of it in the past, It's in this context.
Yeah.
Bloggers mine it for stuff to put on their blogs to help attract Google visitors who arrive via Google searches.
Yes.
And that's my whole experience with this in the past. I've never really read one before.
Okay. And that makes sense, because if this is what people are searching for, then you want to create more content around what people are searching for. And I will confess, as I read through it, one of the things I did is take notes and think, oh, people are searching for turmeric. Maybe I should make some sort of preserve that focuses on turmeric.
I do feel like it's, when you put out something like this, it becomes like a self-perpetuating cycle, because I definitely Googled some of these things.
Yeah.
You know, increasing their Google searches for the next year, either because I didn't know it or I wanted to see what the, you know, what the results would be if I did Google it.
Yeah.
But I mean, ultimately, I feel like it doesn't mean anything.
I know.
I think it can, it's just that we can measure this now. So like, let's do that and pick it all apart.
And true. And like, there have always been food trends, you know, from the time we've had sort of mass media, where people are like, oh, we're interested now in, I don't know, like many episodes back, we talked about the Silver Palette Cookbook, mm-hmm. and that was a trend unto itself. And if you flip through that book, it is a snapshot of a time. You know, it's like, it's very heavy on creme fraiche, because everybody had discovered in the U.S. Right. had discovered creme fraiche for the first time, or like blueberries in places where blueberries shouldn't go, because it was trendy to be like, I'm going to subvert your expectations and put a blueberry where I would only have a savory thing. So it's not new to have these food trends, but it's interesting to see them wrapped up like this.
And the other thing that really struck me is how, I guess it's because we're in the food business, but I would have not guessed that most of this stuff was a trend, you know? Like aquafaba, I feel like that's a food trend.
Yeah, totally.
That was not on this report at all. You know, like pork shoulder? How is that a trend?
Totally. Or
rigatoni. Pork shoulder was on this report. Yeah.
Rigatoni. Rigatoni has been around for a long time. Why is rigatoni suddenly this trending thing?
Right.
I guess because people had given up pasta for a while, and now hearty homemade pastas are back. I don't know. It is intriguing. It is mystifying in some scenarios. So the report's divided into, the first part is risers and decliners. So the things that are coming up and the things that are going down. And I was intrigued by the sustained risers. So ramen.
Hasn't ramen been a food trend for like 10 or 15 years though?
Yeah. And, you know, before that there was, you know, like fake top ramen.
Right.
So like, it's not as if it's something that we are only now becoming aware of, but I guess it's hot. I don't know why, it's because it makes a pretty Instagram picture.
Maybe.
But so ramen, rigatoni, bibimbap, linguine. People are very into the noodles.
Linguine is a funny one to me. Like, oh, linguine is a trend. Okay.
I know. I don't understand. I like linguine. It's delicious, but I don't.
And bundt cakes?
Bundt cakes.
Does bundt cakes ever go away?
No. I have had a bundt cake pan for as long as I have cooked for myself. But I do know that, like,
I've been telling my husband to start a bundt cake business for like at least 5 years. He could have been so ahead of the trend.
He would have been ahead of the curve. I think part of it is that I guess it's Nordic Ware, they have been releasing like new interesting bundt cake pans, mm-hmm. and it's become a thing, like collect them all. So maybe mm-hmm. that's part of it, or maybe it's like the retro hipness. I don't know. But so bundt cakes are hot. The seasonal risers. So these are the things that are sort of dictated by the time of year, which I thought is strange. So pho, again, I've been eating pho for 20 years. I didn't know it was rising. Overnight oats, which I must say I find totally disgusting.
I actually kind of like them.
Do you? They're not for me. I like an oat where it sits with milk for like 10 minutes before you eat it, but
in case you don't know what overnight oats are, it's when you mix up your oatmeal, your dried whole or what old-fashioned oats with yogurt and nut butter and milk and a sweetener and whatever else, and you leave it in the fridge overnight to get soft. And
often in a jar.
Yes, that's true. Sometimes you can make them in the end of your peanut butter jar, so you can get that last little bit of peanut butter or almond butter. And then in the morning, you add whatever fruit you want or nuts.
I understand it as a quick breakfast, but the texture of it, and I'm not a texture sensitive person, but it just doesn't do it for me. I don't know why.
I like it. I like it.
Yeah, that's good.
I almost never have it because Dan is with you. He totally hates it.
And you guys do eat breakfast together
every day.
Faux overnight oats, bitter melon, which I thought was an interesting one on the list, cheese curds, pork shoulder, smash cake, and gender reveal cake.
I have to say, smash cake is one I had to look up. I had never heard of that before. Had you?
I knew it, and I find it ridiculous.
Tell people what it is.
So basically, it's often something you see when kids turn one, that parents will bake this smaller sized cake to give to their child that they can then destroy because it makes interesting pictures and it's fun and it's cute. And then the kid gets to eat as much of their smash cake as they want. I feel like it's a waste of cake.
And now that you mention it, I wonder how much, I mean, this isn't the first time you've mentioned it, but a lot of these trends do seem to be driven by what is photo friendly.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's gross though.
Oh, it's disgusting. I don't have children. I still want to have a child, but I promise you they will never have a smash cake. Sure, I'll give them a little slice of cake or a cupcake, but a whole sort of beautifully decorated mini cake so a child can destroy it.
Well, it is a waste of cake, but then also what a mess you have to clean up.
Yeah, and it's a little kid. That's a lot of sugar for a tiny body.
True, true.
You know, I wouldn't want to deal with a sugar crash that comes after that.
Yeah, that one was not.
Yeah. And I also have to say the whole gender reveal cake just makes me twitch slightly.
Why?
I just feel like slice open a cake to find out what child, what gender your child is having. I don't understand why that would be a thing. But I mean, I am also the person who had a potluck wedding. I don't tend to get into these traditions, I guess. I don't know. But
I don't think they're traditions if they're so newly made up. They're wannabe traditions.
Hopefully I will be pregnant someday and I will find out in a doctor's office at an ultrasound and be delighted with the results. I don't need to have it revealed to me by the food coloring interior of a cake.
But there's some type of I read somewhere a quote from someone that said there are exactly as many special occasions in life as you choose to celebrate.
Yeah.
Which I can get behind.
Yeah.
If you want to do that, that's cool. Go for it. Maurice is not doing it.
I'm not doing it. I'm not judging anyone else who's doing it though. I apologize if I sound judgy.
No, I mean, I think it's pretty weak. Here, I'll tell you what I don't like about it. People are going to start unsubscribing. But I think we have this culture around having babies and parenting that is excessive. This focus on childbearing and child rearing is not good for anyone. I think we're making a big deal over this stuff that should just be a normal part of life. You know? I think that whether you're having a boy or a girl is not a cake worthy occasion.
Agreed.
I guess that's how I feel.
Yes.
But if you want to celebrate that special occasion, you go right ahead.
True enough. Okay. And then finally, the rising stars. So these are the things that are sort of on the upswing. Turmeric, jackfruit. And I just have to add a note. So last fall when Joy and I went to the natural foods show, there was a lot of...
Tons of jackfruit.
Underripe jackfruit shredded as a meat substitute.
Yeah.
It was...
We didn't like it.
No. Cauliflower rice, which I'm seeing everywhere. Multiple grocery stores I was at recently have prepared cauliflower rice. Sourdough bread, funfetti, and vegan donuts.
How is sourdough bread a rising star? It's one of the oldest foods we have.
I don't know. Because people are making it, I guess, or I don't know. And hey, I like sourdough bread. I've gone through phases where I've made it. The only problem I have with homemade sourdough bread is that you have to eat a lot of bread to sustain a sourdough starter, or you're giving away a lot of bread.
And then the other thing is, just to get your sourdough starter going, you have to sort of, waste a lot of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, again, doesn't fly in my house.
True enough. So, decliners, things that are heading on the downswing. So the sustained decliners, gluten-free cupcakes.
Yay.
Evaporated cane juice, which I thought was kind of sad because that is evaporated cane juice is just a less refined granulated sugar. I like right. it. I use it. I don't know why it's declining. Maybe just their other hot new sweeteners on the market. Wheat-free bread, which I must say amen to that. I had the opportunity to try a slice of wheat-free, like, paleo bread mm-hmm. a while back. Oh, my God. It was not good.
I think that this, what we're seeing at these decliners here is, like, I guess I'm seeing two main things, which is one is, like, the
yeah.
the grip of gluten-free is starting to loosen, and the mania for bacon, everything is
yeah,
going
because
away a little bit.
The other two decliners, bacon cupcakes and bacon cinnamon rolls, and amen. Amen to that. No cinnamon roll should have a strip of bacon.
Is there anything else that you would like to see on the decliners list that isn't there?
I don't know. How about you?
I'm kind of over, like, cupcakes and sliders.
Yes. I don't mind a cupcake. Pork belly. I have never needed to eat pork belly, and I've had a lot of it over
the
last...
It's so rarely prepared.
Yeah.
Well.
It's true enough.
Actually.
All right. Seasonal decliners. Quinoa, which makes me a little sad. I do like quinoa.
Do you think maybe it's declining because now there's this awareness that it's exploitative and...
I think that can be part of it. I also just think that there are other hot new grains, like farro is hot now, and millet, and amaranth. And so I imagine...
It's just not the cool kid anymore.
Yeah. Wedding cakes, which I think is interesting because people are still getting married. Maybe they're all doing smash cakes and gender
Perhaps.
Reveal cakes instead of wedding cakes. Kale chips, which, you know, red velvet cake, agave nectar, and marshmallow fondant, which who knew that marshmallow fondant was ever...
You did because you watched the Great British Baking Show.
They didn't use a lot of marshmallow fondant.
I actually watched all the original British versions. I don't know if you guys have...
I've watched some of them.
There's some marshmallow.
Is there? I guess I wasn't.
Plenty of marshmallow fondant going on there.
I guess I wasn't paying attention to the marshmallow fondant.
Or maybe you just didn't see those.
That
I don't know.
Could be. Okay. And then Falling Stars, rainbow bagel, which to me, yes, that is an abomination.
How is that ever a thing? That's what I don't understand.
I don't know. I don't want anything to do with that. Vanilla bean paste, which makes me kind of sad because it's
a viable, good product.
Ingredient. Dutch baby pancake.
I like those too.
Those are delicious. Mulligan stew. Who knew that that was a thing? I don't even know.
I actually thought in a previous review of this that said mulligatawny stew.
Oh.
But it's not.
No, I
don't even know what that is.
I don't know. Buffalo chicken fries, which is that a chicken strip in the shape of a fry?
Oh,
or,
I kind of read it as it being
or fries
buffalo,
with buffalo
chicken on top of fries. But I didn't look that up, so I don't know.
And then chocolate slices, and I'm not even sure what they indicate by that. Like chocolate cake?
Chocolate slices to me really suggest cake.
Yeah. So anyway, those are the things that are declining. And I will be delighted when the rainbow bagel is no longer a thing. So from there, the report goes into like the major themes. And they divided them up into five major themes. So food with a function, traveling through taste, experimenting with pork, bite-sized snacks, and the pasta comeback. And then they used one example from each of those to sort of talk about here is, you know, let's look at one thing that is part of this larger trend.
Mm-hmm.
I thought food with a function was the most interesting one because it seems like the most kind of new cutting edge part. Mm-hmm. All these other things, I feel like, haven't we always traveled through taste? I feel like...
I do think it's becoming more of a focus. I don't know
if you have been
following what's happening with Chris Kimball's new company. I think it's called Milk Street.
Yes.
Have you read about that at all?
I did, that he's giving up sort of like American food and is going to now focus on sort of world cuisine.
Yeah, and I think that is in no small part because of the people are so interested in reaching to other parts of the globe for inspiration and techniques, and I'm glad to see that. And even though people that are really into cooking have probably always been into global recipes, I think it's reaching more. And I think this is true across the board here. Like, we bring a very specialized perspective to this.
Yeah,
but I think this is telling us not what people in the, like, food obsessed world are trends for them. Like, this is like everyone in America, no matter what their special interests are, this is like more of a mainstream snapshot.
Yeah.
I think anyway.
No, that is true. And I didn't mean to dismiss it like I did. You're right.
Oh, I wasn't. Yeah. You know.
It is true. Sometimes I forget how much of my day and my life and my energy I turn over to thinking about food.
Right.
And I forget that other people aren't quite as immersed as I am.
I mean, I think of like a dinner that I can pull together in like 45 minutes as being pretty fast and easy, whereas lots of people would never spend 45 minutes on dinner.
True.
And things that seem really simple to us, like even things like scrambling eggs or roasting a chicken, is very confounding to a huge number of people. These are the things maybe that everyone is Googling, you know?
Yeah.
Let's go back to foods with a function.
Okay. So foods with a function. Turmeric is on this list. Apple cider vinegar. Kefir, which all those happy, you know, gut-friendly bacteria. Kefir's a good one. Bone broth. Super trendy bone broth. Cauliflower.
Still,
yeah.
It's not going to quit anytime soon.
Cauliflower rice, which I question its function. It's just cauliflower.
True.
But I guess because it's replacing a carb. Arrowroot powder, which I don't think of as having a function besides thickening. I think that
that's a very common thing in gluten-free baked goods, isn't it?
Oh, okay. Lactose-free dairy products. We're on the foods with a function. I guess if you have a problem with lactose, those are great for you. Ground ginger, flax egg, which is another gluten-free or vegan baking thing. And macro diet, which I should have looked up and I didn't because I'm not entirely sure
what they mean by that. There's like a very trendy diet right now called that. It's like an acronym for If It Fits Your Macros. My understanding of that diet is it's like basically you can eat whatever, like you have a macro of meaning macronutrients, and then you have like a very specific plan of how many calories, grams of fat, grams of carbs, grams of protein. You have like a very formula for what you can eat, and then within those boundaries you can eat air quotes whatever you want as long as it fits your macros.
Got it.
If you have X number of carbs, you can, you know, spend them all on a piece of cake or whatever.
Interesting.
So I bet you that's what that refers to.
Interesting. So the experimenting with pork, we had talked about the pork shoulder, but...
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that. Is pork more popular now? Like, maybe...
I do feel like pork was sort of vilified for a long time. You know, like, oh, it's, you know, sort of flavorless meat.
Mm-hmm.
But with the advent of all of these sort of artisanal breeds and farming operations, that sort of really good pork has been making a comeback. It's funny. I have such a weird relationship with pork just because growing up, my mom is Jewish and she's not an observant Jew. She is a totally cultural Jew, but we didn't eat pork because she didn't grow up eating pork. And so she didn't cook it. And so I didn't eat it. So I had to sort of learn to speak pork in my 20s when I grew up and moved away. And I still don't cook it a lot just because I don't feel totally comfortable. I don't feel as sort of well-versed or fluent in pork as I do other meats.
We've been making more pork than usual lately because we got one of those immersion circulator guys. And there's just no better way to cook like a pork tenderloin or a pork loin. You really get perfect results.
Oh, that sounds great.
So we've been, you know, long-time fans of the pork shoulder.
Yeah.
And so I think you are too, aren't
you? Yeah, no, I have definitely. I like a pork butt. In the slow cooker, one part jam, one part vinegar, some garlic, some salt and pepper. It's delicious. I mean, I have taken on the race towards pork understanding. But I still, it just feels a little weird to me still sometimes, but that it's this giant trend is fascinating to me because I do feel like, I don't feel like my experience with pork is universal. I feel like most people in this country grew up eating it. It was one of their, you know, staple meats. You know, people eat a lot of ham. Mm-hmm. So I'm surprised that it's such a trend now.
Yeah, it probably all goes back to paleo and like low carb stuff, I would bet.
Meat candy.
Yeah. Mug cakes in the bite-sized snacks category. It seems like they have been around forever, doesn't it?
Yeah, I remember making them when I was a kid in like middle school when I wanted a treat.
Do you like them?
Mug cakes to me are not a particularly good example of cake. But if you are at home and you don't want to go out and you have a few ingredients and you are desperate for a sweet treat, it is a viable option.
I've only made them for recipe development projects. I don't know. There's just something weird about them to me.
Like, I do like the inherent portion control of a mug cake.
Sure.
Because, you know, sometimes if you succumb to the lure of something sweet, you end up baking a pan of brownies. And then you eat all the brownies.
I love brownies.
And so with a mug cake, at least, there's not that same, you know, you have a stop.
You eat it, it's gone.
Yeah.
Huh.
But I did find it was interesting that mug cakes are such a trend right now, particularly since I really thought that people were sort of moving away from microwaves a little bit.
Hmm.
But it's just fascinating to me what the things are that people are searching for. I do know that a couple of cookbooks have come out in the last year or two dedicated to mug cakes. So obviously they are hot. Some of the other bite-sized snack trends that are coming up right now, edible cookie dough, which is one that I remember seeing for a while, like little cookie dough.
I saw that. I was bites. Like, isn't all cookie dough edible?
Well, some people don't like to eat the cookie dough that has raw
eggs.
Egg in it.
I know.
It has never stopped me. French toast sticks, apple pie cookies, which I've seen before.
I have not seen apple pie cookies.
I've seen some people make them. Yeah, it seems like a lot of work. I'd rather make a pie.
Yeah.
Buffalo cauliflower bites is an interesting.
That's really good. Have you ever made that?
I have. It's really delicious. Yeah. Well, cardboard would be delicious if you poured buffalo chicken sauce on
it.
Because it's hot sauce and butter.
Yeah.
It's hard to go wrong. But I that one was an interesting category. And then mac and cheese bites, which I will confess, I have ordered at restaurants on occasion because
I've had them in my life.
It's a breaded ball of mac
only
and cheese.
Human.
I know. You can't resist everything. The pasta comeback, which we've kind of touched on before a little bit, which again, I never stopped eating pasta personally, but I know that there was a steep decline in pasta consumption in the U.S., both because of gluten-free and paleo, and then also the just the low-carb movement in general. But it's interesting that somehow pasta is now coming back.
I'll tell you, I've been writing a lot in the diabetes space lately, and this should be a concern for everyone, but it is a really big concern for people with type 2 diabetes, which is keeping your blood glucose in check,
right?
And so I have went through a phase myself where I thought, who cares? Whole wheat pasta, white pasta, it's not that big of a difference from a nutritional standpoint. But now I recant that thought. Because a good whole grain, whole wheat pasta is very rich in fiber, and that really blunts the blood glucose spike that you would normally get from pasta. And that makes me feel like I can eat pasta more often.
Yeah. No, I almost only buy whole wheat pasta. I last week made spaghetti just because it was like, let's use stuff up. And I had three packages, like three ends of regular wheat spaghetti.
Mm-hmm.
And I had only been eating whole wheat. And I had a headache after I ate dinner.
Really?
Because I was like, because I'm not used to eating the whole wheat version. And I am sensitive to sugar. So it gave me a little headache.
It does keep you fuller longer. It does keep your blood sugar steady. And it's just more nutritious. And so I've thrown back in with whole wheat pasta.
I feel like whole wheat pasta has gotten better.
That's true, too.
You know, so it used to not be so great. But to me, it's just as good these days.
So that's part of my own personal pasta comeback.
Yeah.
Not that I was never not eating pasta, but
no,
I would say I was trying to minimize it.
Yeah. No, I was definitely, I had shifted for a long time to doing more like whole grains. So, you know, barley and things like that.
I'm not eating like a whole wheat pasta every night, but once a week I think is good.
So that's the report. Then it digs into after all of these sort of collections of information, there's just data on different searches, which are interesting to read through, like how to make waffles, how to make bone broth, how to ripen bananas, just the things that people are searching for in either the decline or the growth.
Mm-hmm.
So, Joy, do you have any final thoughts about this thing?
I feel old. And disinterested in trends and skeptical that they even are trends.
I get that.
How do you feel?
I feel like it's interesting, but most of this to me is not where I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm intrigued by the functional food element, although it's not going to impact what I do or what I search for.
When it comes to functional food, I want everything I eat to be functional.
Yeah.
Even if the function is, I feel really sad and this bowl of ice cream is going to provide me a measure of some emotional solace. Comfort, you know, within reason, like a reasonable serving of ice cream.
I mean, my basic approach to food just generally is as many fruits and vegetables as I can fit in a day,
mm-hmm.
some protein, and maybe some really delicious bread, like, and good condiments, obviously. That's right. Kind of how I try to eat. I want things to be cooked at home as sort of the best ingredients I can afford. And that's kind of what I'm, you know, doing regardless of the trends.
What I would like to think about this is that it reflects a larger trend, which is a bigger interest in food and home cooking.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, very positive and something that I want to see, not just because I'm a food writer and it benefits me if people want content around food, but because I think it benefits everyone's health. It helps build community, you know.
Yeah.
Interest in food is good.
Absolutely. Anytime that people are wanting to cook more, wanting to think about what they're eating, I think that that's a mark in the win column.
Yep. I agree. Thanks, Google, for putting this all together for us.
And we'll make sure to link to the report in the show notes so that you can read through it yourself and see what you think. And if you have any thoughts on these topics, please leave a comment. We are really curious to hear what everybody else thinks about this report. All right. And that's it. Our thanks go out to Dan Call for editing the show, to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, and to Raina Rose for providing the music. And thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcast app. We are now on Stitcher. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.